After years of rejection by the state's Democratic majority, a bill to classify nuclear as clean energy has finally cleared a legislative committee and is now advancing in the Colorado House. We recap the committee hearing and discuss what this means on this week's edition of the Power Gap Podcast. I'm co-host Jake Fogelman, and you're listening to the audio version of the show. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing and sharing. Or to check out the video version, head on over to powergab.org for new episodes every week. Enjoy! All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Power Gab, your go-to show for all things energy and environmental policy in the state of Colorado. I'm Jake Fogelman, joined as always by my co-host Amy Cook. And for this week's show, we wanted to provide a legislative update on a bill that we've talked about several times, both this year and in previous sessions. It's one that we're big fans of and we've covered pretty extensively here in the state of Colorado. And that, of course, is the nuclear bill, House Bill 25-1040, which we'll probably refer to as Bill 1040 or House Bill 1040 going forward, would reclassify nuclear energy as a source of clean energy in the state of Colorado. It's something that has been proposed in each of the last three legislative sessions here in the state, and every single time has been killed in its very first committee hearing. But this year, there's a little bit of optimism because for the very first time, a bill to reclassify nuclear as clean energy actually made it out of committee. And then today, as we're recording this morning, actually, it passed on what's called second reading in the House of Representatives. So it has one more vote before it clears an entire chamber, which is a pretty big breakthrough because of all the hostility that we've seen in the state to nuclear energy in years past. But back to the committee hearing, Amy, you actually were there at the committee hearing and wrote up some of your observations as well as provided public comment. And we have that on the II website. We can link to that in the show notes, of course. But why don't you give us some thoughts about how that committee hearing went?
First of all, I can't overstate how excited I am about the fact that nuclear as a clean resource passed out of one committee in the Colorado State House. I was telling this to a group of energy policy folks. I go, baby steps. You don't understand this. Baby steps. It's maybe one tiny step for your state. This is an enormous, this is a huge step in Colorado. Colorado has been openly hostile to nuclear. We are the state of Amory Lovins, who lives in the state and lives in a compound on top of like Snowmass Mountain or something, where the Rocky Mountain Institute has been kind enough to build him an entire house that maximizes solar. All of us do not have those kind of luxuries, but Amory Lovins is not a fan of nuclear and has been highly influential in the state with Rocky Mountain Institute, opposed to nuclear energy. So this is enormous. If I could do my happy dance here, if Damon would let us get up and walk around this, we'd be dancing and cheering and doing probably a Congo line or something. This is how exciting it is. But yeah, I was actually at the committee, and you can go to the II website, thinkfreedom.org or i2i.org, and you can find it there under energy and environmental policy. I wrote just some real brief thoughts on it and my testimony had I given it, but it was late into the evening and I couldn't stay, so I submitted it online. Rest assured, I'm going to make sure my calendar is clear for the Senate committee hearing because I'm anticipating that it's going to pass the House. So I will be in the Senate and I'm going to do it in person. But a couple of things really struck me. One is that it is clear that Colorado needs remedial nuclear energy education. It is a state that at least the lawmakers in the state, or at least the lawmakers on the House Energy Committee, Energy and Environmental Committee, it's not an issue they know well.
Right.
And what they do is they repeat talking points and sound bites from what I would call that part of the green industrial complex that what we have referred to as the mega churches of environmentalism, Sierra Club, NRDC. I'll toss in their green Latinos. They got a little criticism from what I call family members, those on the left who think that their opposition to nuclear is absurd, but it is so clear that they they only have a very superficial knowledge of nuclear energy. So a couple of things that I wanted to point out, and these were predictable arguments against nuclear energy. And we've talked about this on the show before, and it's something called the levelized cost of energy. You'll see it referred to as the LCOE. Lazard has made a fortune off of this. It is really it is an incomplete measurement of the cost of a particular resource. And we've heard it repeatedly, nuclear is too expensive, wind and solar are much cheaper, they're deployable, they're they're deployable, you can build them now. And our point is, and especially at Always On Energy Research, which I co-founded, we call it the Always On LCOE, and that's a complete cost, total system cost. And they kept saying wind and solar are cheaper and wind and solar are cheaper. And they repeated that lie over and over again. And even committee members repeated it. And it is clear that they don't know how power gets from the source to your home or how it comes out of the plug or, you know, the outlet in your wall. They have no idea. They don't know that it's not just the resource. It's an entire system. So they repeated that LCOE, wind and solar are so cheap. They're cheaper than existing coal. It was everything I could do to not stand up and shout, because to some extent, you know, you'd want to say you shouldn't be able to get away with that. But it is committee, and we're respectful, and they're allowed to say what they want to say. We, on the other hand, are allowed to challenge them and say, "Yeah, well, you know what? That is a myth." So they used that LCOE, and committee members used it, which really led me to believe that I've got to make sure that I can stay in person so I can explain to them, stop using the LCOE. So that was predictable. The other one that was predictable too was the conflating nuclear power with nuclear weapons.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, they love that. You know, nuclear. People were bringing up Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
That did come up.
And the atomic bomb and atolls in the South Pacific and Rocky Flats. And Rocky Flats at least made some sense to me. I go, because it's in your own backyard. Okay, I get that. But the World War II, and we shouldn't have dropped it. And
things got a little far afield.
There were times I remember days in committee where there'd be a gavel. They'd not, you know, the gavel would knock and they'd go, stick to the topic, right, please. Hiroshima and Nagasaki do not a nuclear power plant make. But right, anyway, so they conflated that. So there was that. Then there were some other things that were just more denialism. One is that we can't learn from past mistakes. And they were talking about Rocky Flats and previous uranium mining. And to me, so the uranium mining that took place in milling, by the way, that took place in Colorado were done to the standards of the time, which may not be the standards of today, which clearly are not, because why? We've learned from those. Those weren't great standards, but they were the standards at the time. So it wasn't as if anybody was breaking a law or something. They were actually just using best practices at the time. So there was that. This was one of my favorites. And this is, again, a denialism, because I broke the opposition's arguments down into two things. One was the predictable, and the other one is denial. Nuclear isn't clean because uranium is extracted from the ground.
Yep.
Who knew? But so I'm sitting, and this person who said this was talking about wind and solar being clean, and all I could think of was, you clearly don't know where cadmium, tellurium, lithium, cobalt, all of the things that go into solar panels and wind turbines, you don't know where they come from, because right, they are extracted from the ground. So there was that one. And then the other one that we heard is that nuclear, again, the denial that nuclear energy is safe, because it gets back to that conflation of nuclear weapons with nuclear energy, and that, and actually, Ian Tafoya from Green Latinos, and I've got that quote here somewhere, and we can, even a small reactor can release dangerous radiation if sabotaged or if an accident occurs. And especially since many are proposed new in populated areas, to which yes, that's true. Even a small reactor can. That's true. But what are the chances? They're like this. I mean, there's a chance that I could go outside today and get hit by a meteor. Right. But it's probably really small, so I'm not really going to worry about it. But there's a clear need for remedial nuclear energy education in this state. And I hope that the passage of this bill, and with maybe some help from School of Mines or something, we can start talking about nuclear. Actually, we can talk about it with nice people, and it's an okay topic at a cocktail party circuit. But the folks who show up to testify against a bill like this, they are almost religious about it, and they clearly don't understand or don't know nuclear. They know a soundbite that they got from their mega church.
Yeah, no, I wasn't there in person, but I monitored online the entire
listened.
It's like 5 or 6 hours long of testimony. And I had many similar observations you had, and you're right, it could be a lot of it, they need a remedial education, but I think we're discounting the high degree of cynicism that was in a lot of that. Your point about extraction came to mind immediately, because I heard that several times, people that were opposing the bill, uranium needs to be mined, and there's all this industrial work that needs concrete to build the containment domes, and it's like, where do you people think, and the thing is, I'll give them credit, they may be, I may disagree with their argument about nuclear, but they're not stupid people. They understand that wind and solar need to be mined. To me, it's cynicism. It's just whatever argument you can do to stick it to an energy source that I don't like in favor of the energy source I do like. And the reason I think that is because several times what came up is a lawmaker would ask, well, if we pass this, does that mean nuclear is going to compete with wind and solar for subsidies or just compete to be getting built? And my immediate thought was, one, all you lawmakers say we need all the resources we can to decarbonize, but two, even if it does, so what? I thought the goal was zero carbon, not wind and solar at all. So a lot of this stuff was very revealing, unintentionally on their part, I think, unintentionally revealing that a lot of these groups and some of these lawmakers, their priority is not decarbonization. It's not what's the easiest, most abundant, reliable way to get to zero carbon in Colorado. It's how can we juice wind and solar at all costs and step on anything that threatens wind and solar getting built?
The mask is off.
Yeah, the mask is totally off.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with decarbonization. In fact, it has zero to do with decarbonization. It has everything to do with, I love wind and solar, and so therefore nothing else should get in its way. And I think somebody actually said that. Yeah, you're right. Somebody actually said that. Is it going to compete? Will nuclear compete with wind and solar? And you sort of go, well, yeah, I thought that was I thought that was the purpose. Right. I thought that was part of it. Right. And actually, so there are two things on it. One is that they didn't want it competing, right? They don't want it competing with wind and solar. So that's one. And then two, they kept saying it's way more expensive than wind and solar. So then you shouldn't even be worried about it competing. Right. Like there is nothing to worry about except this. So there was an amendment that was put onto it. There were a couple of amendments, but one of them is just blatantly discriminatory. So wind and solar, because they are the preferred, they get preferential treatment on property taxes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Guess what gets excluded? Because it says clean energy sources, and nuclear is going to be considered a clean energy source if this bill gets passed and the governor signs it. All clean energy sources will get preferential treatment except nuclear.
Right. That's a great point. I forgot to mention those amendments because, once again, very clearly, mask off moment, putting the thumb on the scale, it's like, well, okay, fine, we'll let you have clean resources, but it's not going to compete with our preferred resources.
Yeah, we still love wind and solar. Fiscally, even though it uses a ton of concrete and stuff that's extracted from the ground. Oh, and my other one, too, is the amount of time they said, well, but nuclear takes way too long to build. And I thought, huh, you obviously don't know what's coming or right. not coming, which right. is connection to the grid, because the people who perpetrated lawfare on coal and natural gas and to some extent nuclear don't actually think that that table's going to turn on them.
Right.
And it will, because those same transmission lines, things that wind and solar need to get connected to the grid, gigantic transmission lines, rest assured, lawfare works both ways. So,
right.
So there's that. I think we've got a good shot, though, at this. The fact that it passed on second reading, I get it's a voice vote. Third reading will be the true test. Mm-hmm. But the point of it is that we got through a committee. We got through second reading. I am cautiously optimistic.
I think so, too. And it gives me a lot more hope to see that second reading vote go the way it did, because I wasn't sure. You know, getting out of committee was a big win already. But then when you're dealing with the full House, and Colorado's House of Representatives is a very progressive legislative body, and I wasn't sure how they were going to react to this bill. Modest as it is, I wasn't sure how they would react. But getting through a second reading vote tells me that it should be good on thirds. And once it gets to the Senate, I have more hope in the Senate than I would in the House. So I think this might be the year.
So it could be the year. One other thing I wanted to point out, too, about the lack, you know, sort of that it's not safe. It's we can't learn from past mistakes. It's as if Colorado lives in its own bubble, and they don't realize that there are 94 nuclear reactors in the United States operating today, providing clean, reliable, safe power for millions of Americans. If you were to hear that, you said it on that testimony, you'd think that we were going to be an experimental guinea pig for this highly, untested, unproven resource, and we're going to be the next nuclear dumping ground.
Right.
I mean, it was that crazy. That's why we need remedial education. But what I like too, Jake, and you pointed this out to me, some of those who are opposed to it, and they're on the left, I'm just going to, we'll say that straight up, they're getting criticism from their own.
Yeah. So there was a sort of well-known online pundit, energy pundit guy. He's a very left-wing guy. He writes for magazines like Jacobin and The Nation. So very, very far left. But he's a pro-nuclear guy because he sees it as a labor movement win because of the workforce that nuclear supplies. But he tweeted out essentially the results of the committee vote and was kind of celebrating it, and noted that it was an 8-5 vote and that all five votes against were Democrats. And so this sort of started an X pile-on of a bunch of national liberal and progressive pundits being like, what the heck's going on in Colorado that all the Republicans voted for nuclear, all the Democrats voted against? And I think it was an eye-opening moment because, as we've talked about before, nationally, the Democratic Party is pretty on board with nuclear
yep.
energy. The Biden administration was very pro-nuclear. Colorado's Representative Diana DeGette in Congress co-sponsored a bill, the ADVANCE Act, streamline nuclear regulations. But for some reason, the state legislature, there's still some latent hostility. And so there was a bit of a pile-on.
Online. Matt Iglesias, he piled on, and they, in particular, they singled out Green Latinos,
right?
And Evan Tafoya and his testimony. If you want to know the voices of the unheard, you bring in Evan Tafoya,
right.
And he's going to tell you to oppose nuclear, so therefore you should oppose it. And this to me, and I don't think this is where it could. I'm not certain Coloradans realize how much, because you live inside of it, right? How much that Sierra Club, Amory Levins, NRDC, that cabal of environmental groups or self-described environmental groups control, the stranglehold they have over energy and environmental policy in the state, to a point where Colorado Democrats at the state level are not on the same page with the congressional delegation, right. not on the same page. Remember, Mark Udall was a nuclear supporter.
Right.
But they're so far away from like the Democrat Party or just those on the left in other states looking to bring nuclear, you know, or certainly willing to entertain nuclear in their states or have a conversation about small modular reactors. Colorado is a bit of an outlier. Even California has nuclear
That's
power.
Right. That's right. And New York is talking about bringing nuclear power back. So it's a bunch of progressive states that are considering it. And you're right. Colorado is a little bit of an anti-nuclear bubble, I would say.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. So we for sure will keep everybody updated on all the goings on.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a bill we're going to have our close eye on, and we'll continue to provide updates as it continues to get successful votes. So fingers crossed. But do you have any takeaways for our audience?
Yeah, a couple of things. A bunch that sort of come out of this is that we're hopeful. So we usually bring you doom and gloom, and this is your one happy show on energy and environmental policy. This is a happy show, so we're thrilled about that. Yeah. So yeah, mark this day on your calendar. Two is that it is the disconnect between national Democrats and just the ones that are in the state legislature, because voters too in Colorado. There is a real disconnect. People at the state legislature, those that have voted against this bill, clearly don't understand nuclear energy. I don't think they understand what voters want on this particular issue, and they are. Disconnected from the national party at a national level. And then my last one, I always say this, you know, until we actually have the nuclear reactor built, make sure you have a generator, you know, get one as a backup.
Yep.
You'll need it.
Sage advice as always. But that does it for us on another episode of Power Gab. If you like what you saw here today, you can head over to powergab.org to check out our entire back catalog. We produce new episodes every single week. We're also available wherever you get your audio shows, whether that's Spotify or Apple. And if you'd like to reach out to us to suggest future show topics or guests you'd like to see us interview, you can send those to info@powergab.org. We'd love to hear from you guys. But until next week, we'll see you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Power Gab, I hope you'll share it with a friend.
Or even an enemy.
You can listen to more episodes on all of your favorite streaming services. We release a new episode each week.
If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a show topic, email info@powergab.org. And to watch the video version, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.